CCB Convention Report, submitted by Susan Glass, Silicon Valley Chapter President. Editor's note, most of this report appeared in the May 2017 SVCB In Touch newsletter. For the second time in recent years, CCB held its annual convention at the Hilton Hotel in Woodland Hills, California. This is a delightfully accessible hotel with a warm ambiance and welcoming staff who clearly take to heart the hospitality that they extend to blind guests and to all their guests. Many windows in the downstairs corridors make for a light and airy atmosphere. The surrounding neighborhood is reasonably walkable, and the weekend's warm weather made walking a real treat. In my opinion, this year's convention planners get high marks for having plenty of volunteers on hand, especially those from local puppy-raising clubs, who not only helped out in the dog-relieving areas, but also served as indoor escorts to events and the exhibit hall. So much for setting the scene. Let's get on with the conference convention report. CCB Health and Growth. This is a sea change year for CCB. Our new president, Judy Wilkinson, took office last June. Our longtime administrative assistant, Ed Branch, retired, and CCB hired its first ever CEO, Mr. Paul Shane. Not surprisingly, every general session as well as the board meeting addressed issues pertaining to CCB's growth and health. In her opening remarks at the first general session, President Judy Wilkinson said that CCB is transforming itself from an organization of grassroots strategists to a modern nonprofit organization that combines those grassroots strategies with newer techniques. This is necessary in order to reestablish our financial stability. We currently have only enough funds to sustain our organization for the next 18 months. As a first step towards remedying this situation, we hired a grant writer who has already submitted an operations grant. We also made the first cut on a grant educating people about financial matters, and we are a finalist for a VISTA grant, which, among other things, will pay chapter members in more financially strapped communities to help raise the standard of living and education in those communities. Because these chapter members will be paid through a grant, they will not have to report their earnings if they are on SSDI or SSI. Judy Wilkinson explained that grants provide CCB with a concrete track record of its activities, which in turn make it a better candidate for more grant funding. Paul Shane also discussed the four C's: crisis intervention, career, college, and civil rights. CCB addresses crisis intervention through the Ellen Murphy Fund, which helps women who encounter economic and domestic difficulties, such as needing to pay the rent, keeping the heat turned on, or pay medical bills. CCB scholarships help advance college education and careers for blind or visually impaired young people. And, of course, our legislative activities at the state and federal level are evidence of our work in the area of civil rights. Paul Shane said we need to publicize this work everywhere and often because it concretely articulates CCB's mission. He said that nonprofit organizations are always doing the mission money dance, either raising money or articulating their mission. It's crucial, he said, that neither part of the dance supersede the other. ACB Legislative Report. As an advocacy and consumer organization, CCB works with both state and federal legislatures to pass laws that benefit the lives of blind and visually impaired people. Accordingly, each of our CCB conventions always features a federal legislative report from ACB. At our second general session on Friday evening of Convention Week, we heard from Anthony Stevens, ACB's Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. A journalist by trade, Tony Stevens has worked on social justice issues in venues ranging from the halls of Latin American monasteries to the halls of Congress. With us, he addressed issues concerning Medicare and Medicaid, education, employment, and civil rights. Blind advocacy organizations are still working with Congress to pass a bill that would require Medicare to cover the purchase of low-vision aids, such as magnifiers. On Thursday, April 6th, a bipartisan bill on Medicare coverage of devices for those with low vision was reintroduced. Tony Stevens said that we will need to wait until at least October 1st to learn the fate of this bill, because it is dependent upon the new federal budget, which will not be in place until then. Between now and October, he said, Congress will engage in lots of posturing, and it will not be clear exactly what budget we ultimately will have. He acknowledged that a Medicaid bill, which would have adversely affected the blind and visually impaired community, was rejected 3 weeks ago. However, he cautioned that Congress will now try to push that unfavorable legislation through as part of a tax reform package. We will therefore need to remain vigilant. He said that 7 million Americans with disabilities are currently on Medicaid. That's a good number to remember when advocating. One piece of good news, Stephen said, was that the Trump administration did not abolish the Office of Civil Rights. But he warned that we will receive far less help regarding our civil rights during this current administration. If the current proposed federal budget passes, a significant chunk of money will be taken away from the Department of Justice, which by implication will affect our civil rights, although exactly how it will affect them is as yet unclear. In the coming decades, Stevens said, we will need to protect the rights of older citizens who are becoming blind. Due to aging baby boomers, the numbers of blind people will spike in the 2020s and 2030s. He said that the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act did great things for blind youth who were transitioning into their careers. But we need similar legislation for older, blind, and visually impaired Americans. He lamented the removal of the homemaker exemption provision from supported employment services. This provision had allowed blind and visually impaired homemakers to receive support from the Department of Rehabilitation. The loss of this provision undoubtedly makes life harder and more costly for these individuals, and may even preclude their ability to remain at home. The irony, of course, is that institutional living will cost even more. This raises a crucial question. How can we help disabled Americans age in place in their communities at home? Tony Stevens concluded his remarks by reminding all of us that it is our duty to advocate for those issues that shape our lives and to exercise our rights as citizens to engage our democracy. He urged that we all visit the ACB website and read about the legislative imperatives that ACB has set for 2017. Here is a brief glance at some of the imperatives. Number 1, safeguarding programs that promote independence and inclusion. Pass legislation that protects and promotes these programs. Independent living services for older individuals with blindness. The Helen Keller National Center for the Deafblind. Defense Department Peer-Reviewed Medical Research Program. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Education Technology Media and Materials Program. And the American Printing House for the Blind. Number 2, securing independence for Medicare beneficiaries. Number 3, ratification of the Marrakesh Treaty. Special interest groups and workshops, technology. On Thursday afternoon of April 6th, CCB offered 3 technology workshops. In the first hour, San Francisco chapter member Vita Zavoli shared information about the iOS application developed by Kaiser that allows patients to schedule appointments, order medication, and communicate with their doctors. The second segment featured demonstrations of 3 new Braille note takers. Gabe Griffith, who works with HumanWare, shared information about the Braille Note Touch. Next, Bob Sweetman of Sweetman Systems demonstrated the Braille Sense Polaris from HIMSS, which is scheduled for release in May. The Polaris retains many keyboard and operating features of the original Braille Sense, but now runs on an Android platform that, among other things, features swift and efficient web access. The now obsolete Windows CE operating system formerly used in the Braille Sense will be dropped. Andrea Pitzenbarger from Access Ingenuity concluded the Note Taker program segment by sharing the EI Braille from Freedom Scientific. The EI Braille is essentially a Braille computer running Windows 10 and JAWS with a Braille display that slides into a docking station. The final segment of the technology program focused on innovations and techniques that enhance quality of life for people with low vision. Dr. Bill Takashita, who regularly hosts telephone conferences for the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, shared tips for protecting one's existing vision both indoors and out. He recommended wearing yellow or amber-tinted glasses for indoors and darker tints for outdoors. He also stressed the need to build color contrast into one's home environment, both for ease of mobility and safety. BRLC, the Braille Revival League of California, or the BRLC, held its business meeting on Friday morning, April 7th. Following election of BRLC officers, members discussed ways of growing BRLC's membership and influence throughout California. Ideas now under consideration include hosting Braille literacy and education sessions at public libraries, these especially geared toward children, and designing and teaching functional Braille literacy classes to people who lose vision later in life. The classes would teach just enough Braille to enable a person to read things like ATM or elevator signage or room numbers in hotels. We also agreed to reaffirm our connections and donations to the Braille Institute and Braille Challenge. Perhaps BRLC could have a table at next year's National Braille Challenge meeting. BRLC President Linda Porrell reminded members of the April 12th telephone conference being sponsored by the National Braille Revival League, which would feature discussions of current Braille displays, Braille note takers, and Braille computers. CLUA. The California Library Users, or CLUA, also held its business meeting and program on Friday, April 7th. Its morning program featured Mr. Reed Strege, Director of Library Services at the Braille Institute in Los Angeles. He told us that last year, the National Library Service, or NLS, added 3,000 new books to its collection. This is great news, he said, but added that when compared to the number of print titles available, it's only a drop in the bucket. He said that if readers can develop a tolerance for synthetic voice, many more books can become available. Several in the room expressed the wish that professional narrators remain, even in the face of commercial audiobook production and books recorded via synthetic voice. Reed agreed that the collection needs to balance its offerings between professionally recorded books and newer technologies. He told us that NLS is researching its next-generation book player, but that at present it's not clear what this player will look and be like. NLS is seeking patron feedback. Do we want the new machine to be voice-activated? What size would we like it to be? Would we like it to be interactive? Would we want it to combine a refreshable Braille display with an audiobook player? Californians are one of the largest reading populations, and now is the time for us to weigh in with our preferences. Susan Glass, who is ACB's representative to NLS's Collections Development Advisory Group, invited CLUA members to share with her their wishes and preferences regarding NLS's current offerings, future growth, and website interface. She will attend the CDAG conference at the Library of Congress from May 24th through 26th of this year and will carry reader suggestions with her. Rob Turner updated CLUA members regarding changes happening at Bookshare. Currently, Bookshare has 550,000 books in its collection. Much of this growth stems from the Special Education Grant, which, after 5 years, is now up for renewal. Rob urged Bookshare users to contact their congresspeople and recommend that this grant be renewed for another 5 years. Bookshare will soon implement a new way to search for books. When you search, along with the display of titles, you will also see a list of authors. You can then choose a particular author to narrow your search. There will also be flexibility in the category search feature. Bookshare is working on cover images for its books. As part of global literacy, Bookshare continues to work on availability of books internationally. When a foreign publisher produces a book, it will be accessible without Bookshare engineers having to do anything to it. Ideally, it will have image descriptions, navigation by chapter, sections, and subsections. Bookshare is also continuing its work on MathML. They work with vendors who develop DAISY readers that can accommodate MathML. Guide Dog Program. On Saturday morning of April 8th, I attended the Golden State Guide Dog Handlers Program. Yes, this affiliate recently changed its name. You formerly knew it as Guide Dog Users of California. The program featured Ms. Peggy Rue of Rue Crew Collaborations, who shared valuable information with us about guide dog first aid and CPR. This was a hands-on workshop in which we learned how to know if our dogs are overheating and how to cool them down if they do overheat, how to stop bleeding from a severe wound, how to perform a Heimlich maneuver on a choking dog, how to treat frostbite, and where to check for a dog's pulse. Ms. Rue's business is based in Sparks, Nevada, and is currently the only such service available in the United States. CCB Resolutions. Perhaps the most important part of CCB's final session on Sunday morning is the reading of and voting on resolutions. We always pass a resolution thanking hotel staff for hosting us, and another thanking all volunteers. It was especially delightful to do so this year, as the Woodland Hills management and staff were exemplary. President Judy Wilkinson invited as many staff as were available to be present when this resolution was read. In thanking volunteers, we paid special tribute to members of local puppy raising clubs who not only helped out in the guide dog relieving area, but also provided sighted guide to any CCB member who needed it. Here is a summary of the other resolutions. Resolution 2017-1, Mobility Education and Teaching Instruction. This resolution confronts unreasonable restrictions imposed by school districts on mobility instructors and blind students. CCB will take steps to prohibit districts from imposing unnecessary restrictions on their blind students, such as preventing them from working on nearby street crossings with their mobility instructors, preventing them from meeting during school hours, etc. Such restrictions interfere with core curriculum. Since this problem is national in scope, CCB recommends that ACB address the issue as well. The resolution passed. Resolution 2017-2. Work with legislative committees and websites to be sure all documents posted thereon are made accessible to blind and visually impaired persons, and that this happens in a timely fashion. The resolution passed. Resolution 2017-3. Library Services Funding. The Braille and Talking Book Library could lose up to 90% of its funding if President Trump's budget passes. CCB will ask that the California legislature fund both the BTBL and the Braille Institute libraries at the level currently funded by the federal government. This resolution also passed. Resolution 2017-4. The CCB Constitution and Bylaws Committee proposed an updated constitution. The process of designing and writing this constitution will make use of, but not be limited to, in-person and telephonic, web forums, etc. In other words, CCB will do all it can to include all members in the process. The proposed constitution will be distributed to the membership no less than 30 days before the next conference and convention and will require a two-thirds vote to pass. The resolution passed. Much, much more happened at the convention, but time and space constraints prevent me from covering it all. I believe that the convention's general sessions were recorded and are available to those who would like to hear them. Some of the best things happened after hours as we sat chatting together in hospitality suites or caught a late-night snack in the hotel restaurant. I reconnected with people I first met at Camp Bloomfield in Los Angeles when I was a child. I also made some new friends from the San Francisco and Fresno chapters. These connections can't happen virtually, and even though cost can sometimes be prohibitive, I hope that we never eliminate our live conventions. They are community builders, and they allow us to exercise democracy, albeit on a small scale, at a time when all citizens need to feel that they have power and can make some difference in the world. End of article.